Welcome to the season finale of First Up. In today's episode, we are joined by Jackie Moreno, ISAC's Chief Service Officer, to recap and reflect on this first season of First Up. Welcome to the final episode of First Up, Season 1. I'm your host, Brian White, joined as always by
Jasmine Jaren Gonzalez. Hey, everyone!
And in today's episode, we are joined by a couple of guests, one of them being our producer, Matt Montez.
Hey, everybody. Matt Montez. Glad to be on another episode. Final episode today. We're going to do a little different format. So just a really brief bio. So I've been at ISAC for, in a couple months, going to be 15 years since I joined the agency. And I've had one boss the entire time, and I'm very pleased to welcome ISAC, the Illinois Student Assistance Commission Chief Service Officer, Jacqueline Moreno.
Hello. Thank you for finally having me.
Thank you for joining us today. How are you? That's the first question.
Oh, you should have scripted that better because I'm a mess. My oldest child turned 18 today, so I could laugh. I could cry. Who knows what's going to happen? I am an emotional wreck today.
Well, happy birthday to him. So as we're getting into our episode, can you just briefly introduce yourself to our listeners, your career path? Were you a first generation student?
Sure. Yes, I was the first person in my family to graduate from high school and the first person to attend college. I worked my way through college after I started. My family was not supportive necessarily, so I had to figure out a way to pay for it myself. That's how I ended up in financial aid, because I went to the financial aid office every day and said, I need more, I need more, I need more. And they gave me a job because there was no more. So that's how I started working in financial aid. I worked at Loyola in their financial aid office for about 9 years. And then I moved to ISAC. And I think it'll be 23 years in August. Yeah, 23 years.
And then can you explain your main role and who you oversee? What do you do?
Sure. In my role, I oversee all of our public-facing services. So the services we provide to students and families, but also the services we provide to other practitioners. So school counselors, admission professionals, anyone who works with students. If we provide some type of supportive service, it falls within our division. That includes the ISAC Core, our near peer mentoring program. It includes the FAFSA completion efforts, the Gear Up program, and the extensive training and professional development we provide for college access practitioners.
Real quickly, for our listeners, could you explain a little bit about what the ISAC Core is in case our listeners haven't heard about it?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Or forgot about it.
Yeah, because I think we mentioned it on one or two episodes, but yeah. Just as a recap, y'all.
Sure. The ISAC Core, the Illinois Student Assistance Corps, is a near-peer mentoring program. This will be the 15th anniversary this June. It's a statewide program where we recruit college graduates as soon as they graduate to work across the state, in every community in the state, to help other students navigate their path to college. And not just students, but students and their parents, help families navigate the process, particularly families that don't have college-going history. So the process is more confusing. Our program is open to everyone, but we do tailor our services for first-generation students and their families.
So Jackie, you mentioned that you were the first to go to high school, go to college in your family. How was that impact of you doing that to your family?
Yeah, so I was the first person to graduate from high school, which was a pretty big deal. It certainly didn't make anything easier for me. It was a long, difficult process, but it definitely made it easier for my younger sister. When it was her turn to go to college, I was able to support her. I mean, impact on my family, I'm not sure. Maybe that impact is still to come. I grew up in a working class family, and it wasn't a big deal. Going to college was a weird thing to do. It was not something that people were interested in. It was like, what's wrong with what we have? What's wrong with our lifestyle? Why do you need to do this? Do you think you're better than us? And the funny thing is, the trades and other blue collar type of work, you know, can be very lucrative as well. So I, coming out of college, was the lowest paid person in my entire family, in my extended family. So I don't know, they thought it was a little funny, a little silly to go to all the trouble of going to college. But I think it's grounded me. My family definitely has grounded me. You know, I never thought that I was particularly special because I was the first person to graduate from high school or because I was the first person to go to college or anything like that. And I think that has helped me in my career and in my job and relating to students and families. It's probably why I got into this work in the first place.
It's interesting that you say that because I feel like that's a testament to how times have changed too, in terms of education being more important as we go through the years. Mm-hmm. I know in previous episodes, I said that I was the first of my four brothers to go to high school, complete high school, go to college as well. And I end up being the person that had the most income from my family. So it's interesting that the dynamics have changed. And then also that ties into the work that we do and the people that we help. So,
you know, on the flip side, Brian, because I also think about some of the things that Jackie mentioned, I can still relate to, right? So yes, there are some differences, but when Jackie was like, oh, you think you're special because you went to college, like as a first gen, when I graduated and I came back, same thing where it was like, oh, you think you're smarter than me because you have a college degree? I don't know if other first gen students hear that too, but I struggled with that. I'm like, no, like, I don't want you to think that, you know. But another thing that Jackie mentioned was kind of similar, where my mom thought that immediately with a college degree, I was going to be making buku money. You know
what
I mean?
It's not always the case.
It's not always the case. So I think there's a bit of correlation there, but also it's interesting. So I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that experience you had after graduating, coming back home.
I know it's different now because people talk about first generation college students, which wasn't really a term when I was a first generation college student. That is a term that started to come to be while I was at ISAC. I mean, the entire time I worked at Loyola in the financial aid office, I'm certain no one uttered the word first generation college student. And I know when we started saying that at ISAC, we had to explain it. No one knew what we were talking about. So, I mean, it's good that today we have more attention to that. One of the things we did talk about back then was the idea of what you had to leave to be the first person in your family, what you had to leave behind. So when I decided to go to college, that was a definite break from my family. I moved out. I was then supporting myself. I didn't ever come back. So I don't necessarily have those same kind of stories as this generation of first-generation college students, or maybe I do, but there's a lot more stories that are about, you know, going to college, being supported by your family, coming home, the aftermath. I was 17 and I was on my own, and I've been on my own since then. So I didn't have to have that experience necessarily.
I guess I assume I'm like, oh, you came back home because that's what we did.
Well, let me tell you. So I'm 50 now, and it's not that easy, right? You don't get your degree and then the world changes. The world is a lot more difficult now than it was when I was a college student in the 90s. And now, like I said, my son is turning 18 today. He doesn't suddenly have this magical, easy path either, because even at 50, even in the financial aid industry, in the position that I'm in, I am still a first generation college student. So we think that when you get your degree, you suddenly have everything that families that have been going to Harvard since the Mayflower or whatever have. And that's not the case. So it's transformative, but it's a path. You don't suddenly have parity with people who have a history of college going and a history of being able to pass wealth and assets on to their children. So it's still going to be a struggle.
The day that I started at ISAC, I remember the day. So I finished undergrad and I walked at graduation, but I still had a 4-week course to finish all my final credits. I turned in my last assignment. It was at the beginning of the first week of June. I turned in my last assignment and I remember sitting in the computer lab at UIC. I press send. All right, done. College is over. I have to go to my first day at ISAC now. There wasn't this, okay, I press send. I'm an adult now. I know exactly what to do. I know what steps to take because I'm done with college now. I feel like you're alluding to once you get that diploma, there isn't like this magical or great awakening that like, okay, I know how to be an adult now. I know how to join the workforce. It's a constant learning process as a first-gen student or first-gen professional.
Right. It's a hustle. The job that I get at Loyola, so I said I went every day and just nagged the people in the financial aid office because I knew that when the semester ended, I was done because I had no way to pay my outstanding balance. And so after week 5 million of me harassing them, there was a position open, a professional position. And they said, why don't you apply for this job? You'd have to go to school part-time, but then your tuition would be paid for. So I went to the interview and they asked me questions like, do you know how to use Lotus Notes? Do you know how to use WordPerfect? Do you know this and this? No. The real answer was no. But I said, yes. I completely lied because I thought, I can figure it out. There's got to be a book. I can read it. And I got the job based on completely false pretenses. I knew nothing. I had never done any kind of office work whatsoever. But I went in at night, every night, and had my little study book for Lotus Notes and would log onto the computers after everyone went home until I learned how to do what I said I could do. But, you know, it's a hustle.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you just have to give students in general a chance to do something, first generation students as well. But even them coming out of graduation, similar to what Matt said, sometimes there's no real transition period for you to reflect on, I just graduated and now I have to go work. So there's things that come in between that and there's things that should be reflected on, but that's not always the case.
You don't get an instruction manual upon leaving college.
Exactly.
With your diploma.
Exactly. And you also don't get a gold star. I mean, Matt knows that I struggle with this and I say it all the time to new core members. You know, we purposely recruit first-generation college students so that they can help potential first-generation college students. And, you know, this was in a previous episode of the podcast. Someone else talked about this. People show up on their first day at ISAC and they want a gold star and a high five and they want to be special because they graduated from college. And the rest of us are like, we were all the first in our family. Just get to work. There is no gold star. That's not the hardest thing that you're going to get through. The rest of life is hard. Being an adult is hard. This job is going to be hard. And that sounds terrible. I should be like, yes, congratulations. But that's a little bit misleading, right? It's great that you got through.
You're going to need that mindset to help the students that we work with.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think as ISAC Corps members, looking back at my time in that role and that position, I feel like I learned a lot more about community and looking at people around me and using that experience to help the students that I was helping. So you will learn things from other ISAC Corps members that you wouldn't know. Everybody has their own story. So just hearing those stories from those other ISAC Corps members and being able to share my own story with students, I feel like you get that from ISAC. And that's a beautiful thing.
And I also don't think that there is some magic formula to help all first. Like, we all come from different areas, different circumstances, situations. We all have different journeys, right? And we will always have different journeys. So there is no one size fits all. I think I'm the kind of person who thinks, what do we bring to the table? What assets can we leverage when we are in this field? So I hear you and I'm like, okay, so now what, right?
Well, yes, exactly. And people come to ISAC with the wrong idea of what their assets are. The story of how awesome you are doesn't really help. The story of the struggles that you faced and how you overcame them, the mistakes that you made, how you got back on track, those are the stories that matter. But everybody's sort of prepped to talk about how awesome they were, how they were such a role model, how people should look up to them. And that's the opposite of what's helpful. You know, someone who's feeling like, I don't belong here, maybe being a college student isn't for me, maybe this is too hard, they don't want to hear about how great you were, how you got into the most selective school and you were in all AP classes and blah, blah. That does not help them. What helps them is, you know what? I am like you. I have some similarities to you. I didn't get everything right. Here's my greatest mistake. and here's how I overcame it. Here's the thing that, God, I hate to even admit that I did this, but it turned out okay. I got through okay, right? It's the stories of adversity, the things that you messed up yourself. Those are the things that are going to help students find a roadmap to and through.
And still be able to persevere through those challenges, right, and right, come out with the end. Right. And just, we all came to the finish line, right? Like, we all got there.
Right.
I will say, like, it is an accomplishment to be able to persevere through those challenges. I'm like, dang, we actually did it, y'all. Like, it does feel good. I'm like, okay, so now what is the next step? And that's where I feel like, after college is scary. Adulting is scary. And reality hits you in the face. And I'm going to just leave it at that.
I mean, sometimes you just got to take that step, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not worry about the possibilities of failure or the possibilities of success. You just got to
keep hustling.
Do it sometimes. Like, yeah. Hustling.
So, like I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show, I wanted to do a little something different because obviously we have Jackie here, but I want to, of course, ask Jackie some questions, but I want to throw these questions to Brian and Jasmine as well. Just last episode, kind of a reflection over the past season. I have a few questions here. I might not get to all of them, but that's okay because I want us all to have like good conversation here and just, you know, be a little more fluid. So I'll ask this question and Jackie, I'll start with you, but Brian and Jasmine, I also want your input. And Joe, you're not mic'd up, but you're the newbie here and I want as much perspective as you can give. So I'll start with this question, Jackie. Let me start with you. We've had 21 episodes this season. Jackie, as you've listened on, as we've gone through this season, how did that impact the way that you viewed your own experience as a first-gen student?
Oh, that's a great question. It made me reflect on what I've held back in talking about my experience. So it's really easy for me to sit here and say, hey, I want people to talk about the things that went wrong. I don't really do that. I'm not going to do it here either.
What was your challenge?
You know, call me back next season. Maybe I'll be ready. But I don't do that. And I need to get better at that because imposter syndrome doesn't necessarily go away. It's not necessarily a bad thing either. Because when you're the first, you do have to try a little harder and keep an eye out for what's around you. So imposter syndrome isn't the worst thing, but it doesn't necessarily go away. I will share what I was thinking about on the way over here today. I don't have my degree hanging in my office. Lots of people have their degrees hanging in their office, and I do not. It even now, it seems so stupid. This is not a traumatic thing. But because I was a part-time student, I was always judged by the other people in our profession and treated like I was on the B team or there was something to be ashamed of for having been a part-time student and have taken longer. And so I did not hang up my diploma because I thought people are going to do the math. Even now when people ask me, oh yeah, what year did you graduate from Loyola? I say, oh, I started in 91. Because I still can't answer that question because it still makes me feel inadequate. So I thought a lot about that as I listened to the episodes. I mean, I don't think it's hypocrisy because I'm at least admitting that I can't do it.
And Brian and Jasmine, so again, I'm going to throw this back to you. You guys have shared a lot of your own story, but going through this project, this new experience, is there any way that you've changed the way you viewed your own experience? Brian, I'll start with you.
I think for me, similar to Jackie, there's a lot of other things that I didn't share, not necessarily positive things that has happened in my life or affected my life. But I think hearing the stories of all of our guests that have came on that have been first generation professional students, I feel like it's been validating, especially with Jasmine across from me, hearing her story more. I've known Jasmine for years and just hearing her story come out on this podcast, that validated my story and just me as a first generation student doing it on my own for the most part.
You know, it's interesting because I am just naturally a vocal person and I used to not be that way, especially in college. But I think I have coached myself now to be like, at this point, it's a disservice to keep my mouth shut, right? And I think that I have struggled with feeling like what I have to say is valuable or that what I bring to the table is valuable or whatever the thing is. That's a struggle. That's an internal struggle. And I think that going back and listening to the podcast, I'm like, oh my gosh, I really did say that, didn't I? I'm like, oh no. So I reflect back and I'm like, should I have not said that? Should I kept my mouth shut? And I'm like, no, Jasmine, no. You need to speak up. It's a disservice if you say nothing. So my reflection on this is more of like, oh my gosh, I really said that.
I feel like I understand what you're saying. And I think it was part of the reason that we started the core, right? We didn't start the core just to help first generation students navigate, but we also started the core to bring more first generation students into the spaces where gatekeepers are and into decision-making spaces. And I think what I would describe what you were saying is you didn't feel comfortable taking up space. And part of the goal for the core was to get more first-generation students taking up space in the academy, in the policy-making world, in the places where people are talking about what students need. We need more of us who were the first to come there and sit down and tell our stories and not feel intimidated or that we don't belong there. We need to be comfortable taking up some of the chairs that are there.
And I will say, seeing you speak up about some things that we don't always bring up at like statewide discussions, meetings, things like that, I'm like, oh my gosh, Jackie really did just say that. I'm like, man, she has some guts. And I'm like, okay, this is a disservice. Like, what are we doing here if we're not going to be ruffling feathers? And when I send some emails, I'm like, okay, here I go. And let's just cross our fingers. I mean, that's the mindset I've taken on now, but it's because I've seen people like you speaking up. And I'm just like, those are discussions we should be having.
There are plenty of places that never invite me back to speak again. You know, it's one of the pitfalls of sometimes saying the things that need to be said. And I'm okay with that. I used to not be okay with that. And now I think, you know what? I am here. I have a story to tell. And if people don't like it, these are not my people. If I need to invent a new venue where people who are my people talk about things that are important for first generation students, I'm at a point in my career where I can do that. I don't need someone's space if their space is hostile. We can build our own space for these stories.
And do you really want to partner with someone who doesn't have the same values or sees the importance of those things that people don't want to talk about? You know?
It's a hard balance because in order to change, in order to make real change, you need to bring everybody along.
That's true.
One of the things that I've learned is you can't start a fight with everybody who doesn't see eye to eye. You can tell your story, connect with them in different ways. It's our burden. We have to bring everyone along. And that takes a certain set of skills.
And that's a hard balance. Like, when do you know when's the time to, I say, ruffle the feathers, right? And when's the right time to be like, okay, I got to take a step back and let this pan itself out. Like, that's hard. That's the struggle I struggle with right now.
Joey, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming from such a different perspective, obviously. You know, I'm not a first-gen student and I've had some privileges in my life. So on one level, it's inspiring to hear all these stories and also how they're not all the same. They're all different, but there's this one common piece of it. And even though you have this one thing in common, everybody's journey there is a little different. But at the same time, I also can relate a lot as far as some of the mental health things we talk about, imposter syndrome and the struggles that individuals have in terms of education and learning and even social aspects of things like that. So, I mean, I've listened to all this stuff and I told you guys I'm sometimes hearing really great points and things, but I'm also trying to listen to audio and I'm trying to like separate the content from the actual sounds and the audio itself, but it's all washed through me and I feel like I've internalized and gained a lot from just being in these conversations with you guys.
Well, it's a good segue to the next question I was going to ask. And let me ask the question, but I'll answer with my answer first, because I was going to ask everybody what was one of the favorite moments of this past season or what was one of your favorite episodes of this past season. And I was just going to mention that, you know, some of the ones that were my favorite when we had Brandon and Paul on, I think one of the difficult things about this podcast is that we all work for this agency where we've gotten a lot of education, we've gotten a lot of training and helping any type of student, but obviously a lot of background and first generation students and the struggles that they face. So when we're talking about this, we're talking about it with a very filtered set of experiences and a set of trainings, because we need to have a lot of tools in our tool belt to help these students. So one of the main reasons we started this podcast is we want to get a lot of unfiltered stories, experiences. And I think those episodes with Brandon and Paul, I love those episodes because they just talked, you know, what they were feeling in the moment as they were on a college campus, those real genuine experiences that they had. So those are some of the couple episodes that I enjoyed. But Jackie, did you have any favorite moments or favorite episodes this season?
Oh, yes. I mean, they're all my favorite. I love them all. I have a favorite episode and a favorite moment, not to offend anyone because they were all my favorite. My favorite episode is episode 20 with Maggie Espinosa and mental health. I have listened to that over and over and over. I feel like if there was such a thing as spin-off podcasts, that could be a spin-off podcast because she talks about so many things that I think every college student goes through, every person goes through, especially first-generation students. She has such useful tips. I love the way she talks about being a warrior for your own peace. And it made me think back a lot on things that happened as I was going through. You know, it took me a very long time to get through college and people that I couldn't have in my life anymore and boundary setting and things like that. And then how to take care of yourself in the process. That episode also made me feel a joy that we don't talk about, like the joy in getting through things, the joy in succeeding and how we can help other people. She really touched on so many things. She talked about decolonizing mental health. She talked about the traditional way, right? And traditional ways of thinking are so universal because I grew up on the South Side and everyone was working class. And so it meant doctors are smarter. Therapists are smarter. Whoever you're going to see is smarter. And you took away your own agency. You just need to blindly trust experts. And I just think there was so much in that episode that should be unpacked. That was my favorite episode. My favorite moment, I think, was in, I think it was episode one, when Jasmine was talking about going to UIS and being in Springfield and having a connection with her mom that she wasn't expecting, where she was able to sort of feel the place that her mom was from because she was in a more rural, not Springfield is not rural, but you drive through rural places to get to Springfield. And that really stood out for me. I cried and I'm not a crier.
It's funny you say it's not rural because I'm like, there was cornfield right out my window.
You're from Evanston. That was not rural, Jasmine. And I even thought that in the episode. I was like, Jasmine, get in the car and drive around.
In my context, from going from Evanston to Spring, I mean, it was a jump for me, okay?
You need an internship in Southern Illinois.
It's a very important. Context is everything.
Context is everything. I'm not used to that.
Brian, favorite moment from the past season?
So my favorite episode, that's hard to pick out of them all. They're like little children. But I think my favorite moment was the parents episode. And I think Jasmine really took grasp of that episode. And there was a lot of talk about just advocating for your children if they're not able to advocate for themselves. So that's an important episode. And then my other favorites is probably our Valentine's Day, our self-care episode. There's a lot of fun, a lot of good tips in there. We had Joey join in that episode. So it was just a lot of joy and, I don't know, unexpected. That was probably my most unexpected episode or moment.
Jasmine, favorite moment, favorite episode?
The first thing that came to mind was the parenting episode.
That was a good with Olivia and Ted.
Because yeah, I felt like, man, one. I really want to pick their brain. Like, they've been a mom. I'm just trying to figure it out. Like, it's hard. But that episode was very personal to me because I felt like I myself had so much to learn. I think, yes, advocating for our kids, but hearing that from seasoned mothers, that was very therapeutic, you know? So, yeah, that was my favorite episode.
And I'm not a parent, but just listening to that episode and taking a step back to hear that from all three parents was important and pretty impactful to me too.
And it's validating because it's like, man, we are taught to trust the teachers, the people, but where's the line where I'm like, wait, I don't feel right about this, you know? And that episode really made me feel more comfortable about like, okay, I'm not crazy. I'm not doing too much.
I remember getting a text message from Jackie right after we put that up and it was just OMG. And I was like, OMG, what? She didn't follow. It took her a while to follow up. She's like, that was such a great episode.
Yeah, I mean, OMG from me could be many, many things.
I didn't know what to expect.
Joey, did you have a favorite episode or moment?
Well, I mean, I have a lot, really, but I love any moment where people can relax and banter and you have that sort of friendship and rapport around. So Brandon and Paul's episodes were great. Also really loved your episode with Fernando, but one episode that kind of stuck out to me was Courtney's episode because he had a very different perspective coming in and talking about his, you know, learning disability. Yeah. And I just think that was such a unique perspective of approaching all of this and talking about the different ways that people learn or the different strengths people have in school. And this also goes to the point that you've made a bunch, Jasmine, talking about the idea of smartness. And
the notion of smartness.
Yeah, exactly. That idea. And that we measure these things in such unique and different ways. But in school, sometimes it feels like there's one way that they're measuring it. And I thought it was really interesting from Courtney's perspective in that episode. So that one stuck out to me for sure. I was actually just going through the list of the episodes and being like, man, there's so many. Also, any episode with just you guys where you guys just got to have a little fun and play around with the spring break and the Valentine's Day episodes. Those were both so fun.
I guess kind of just to wrap things up here, and Jackie, this is mostly a question for you, but you know, anybody else give your perspective as well. Because we've all, you know, been in this field for a while. Jackie, you've been in financial aid for how many years now?
32
years of financial aid. And obviously we kind of put the more broad term of college access, but you know, being in this field for so long, where do you think this podcast, this project fits in with the bigger picture, not just as an agency, yes, as an agency, as ISAC, but also the bigger field of college access?
Oh, that's a great question. I hope you have an hour for my answer. I think this podcast is great because it's real stories from real people. You know, it's funny because college access professionals were supposed to make things easier, but I think sometimes we inadvertently make it harder because of this idea of exceptionalism and who is or isn't college material or what it takes or doesn't take. And we constantly, I mean, think about every conference we go to. It's always somebody with 47 degrees who, you know, graduated when they were 12 or something and has published 52 books. We're always focused on exceptionalism and extreme achievement, which is an outlier. And I've loved listening to this podcast and just regular stories from regular people about what they faced. And I think this was a great first season, but I can't wait for next season because I think you finally started to find your groove, right? This is a storytelling podcast. This is not an educational, informational podcast. This is not where you listen to what to put to question number 35 on the FAFSA, right? That's not what this is. There's enough of that. There's information. This is a gateway or a bridge or a link or a place to draw people in so that they can feel that they're in the right place, that this is for them, that they don't have to be exceptional, and come back again and again to episodes and hear from people who were first-generation college students or people who can support first-generation college students. You know, Joey, you said, oh, you had some privilege in your life. And we all do. Even as first-generation college students, we all do, and that we can recognize it and then share what we have with others to help them to and through, I think can be great. It's a great tool for increasing the feeling of belonging for students and inviting people from across the spectrum. If you're thinking of going to college, if you're in college, if you just graduated, if you're like me and you're thinking about retirement, what are the different experiences that you have throughout your life getting ready to be and then becoming a first generation college student?
I think what I learned the most over this past season is that we barely scratched the surface. We've had different formats. You know, we've had kind of interview style. We've had, you know, a little bit more of just conversation. Each episode could probably have their own season of a podcast. Mm-hmm. And so it gives us this good problem to have, like, where do we go from here? Brian and I were on a mini consultation call with the people who run the Instagram First Gen and Juice. And they had asked us, who's your audience? And I thought about it, I'm like, oh, that's a dumb question. It's first-gen students. But I thought, I'm like, no, do I know who my audience is? Is it supposed to be first-gen students? Is it supposed to be first-gen professionals? But it gives us this good problem to have, because now we can go back to the drawing board and retool different things and decide this is what we want to focus on. Because we could just have a series, and we might even look into just talking to ISAC Corps members who are fresh college grads telling their story. So yeah, we've barely scratched the surface, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of direction we go after this.
Well, and your guests and your audience, those are two things to think about, because I think about it, and you know, I'm not the ruler of the world, so whatever you guys decide is fine, as long as it's what I want. But when I think about this podcast, I feel like I picture somebody who's about to decide that they can't do this anymore. And then they remember an episode, or somebody tells them, hey, listen to this. There's a story about someone who went through the same kind of thing. So the audience, I feel like, is people who are about to give up or thinking about giving up, wherever they are on the spectrum, from I'm going to be the first person in my family to go to college to I am and now I'm in the workplace. Our guests can be all kinds of guests, but I feel like this is something I want people to, when they feel alone, when they feel like they don't belong, that they can have a sense of belonging from hearing the way that all of the guests talk about what they went through.
And you know what? It might not even, I mean, yes, our audience, but our purpose, our reason, right? Because I think, like, man, our audience can vary and times change. I don't think we will ever be done getting perspectives. It's just never ending. And I think that what you just said, Jack, I'm like, yes, it's more about our purpose, right?
Yeah, like Nelson Algren or Humans of New York or whatever those kinds of things are where you capture real stories.
And I think a point of emphasis too is with our guests and our listeners, we try to create a safe space. Usually you think about a safe space as being something physical, but we want people to be able to listen in and feel safe listening in and really dive into the stories that they're hearing and really hear what people are saying. So creating that safe space, whether it be audio, whether it be visual, physical, I think that that's just something that we strive to do.
Something I love about podcasts is feeling like you're in the room with people and part of the conversation, and they can be your friends or teachers or whatever. And so you talk about creating that space. So you're somebody in the car listening to this podcast maybe, and you're hearing these voices around you, and you know that they share my experience, they understand me, and they get me on that level. And I think that's so valuable. And any podcast audience, like you're talking about, is listening because they feel like, or they enjoy being part of that experience in that circle or discussion that we're having. And so as far as a safe space, you know, it's audio, but that can really be valuable for somebody just to feel accepted and part of something bigger.
Yes. You know, I'm old enough to say this. In the early 2000s, there was a huge research project to try to figure out who students trusted the most and who their influencers were. And they looked at traditional media and all kinds of things. And in regular media, the thing that influenced students and parents the most were radio DJs giving advice. Because if you listen to someone every day, you felt like you had a relationship with them, you felt like you knew them, they liked the same music as you liked, and so you felt like they were your people. And so this huge project showed that radio DJs talking about their experience had the most impact on both students and parents. And I think that's really true. You listen to the radio in the car. Now you can listen to podcasts. I'm not a celebrity fanatic. I don't cry about dead celebrities. But last year when Lynn Bramer from XRT died, I cried my head off because I'd been listening to him since college. For my entire adult life, I was listening to this man every morning. You know, we went through 9/11 together. Not really, but he was on the radio while it was happening, while I was getting home, and I aged with him. And I think that podcast, they're the modern version.
And last thing I'll say, because this is a field where it's just so much data, so many numbers. You know, there's all this research being done. Without the stories to complement these numbers, this data,
yes,
we're not going to figure anything out. And so I'm very proud. I'm very glad to be a part of this project where we can create that space for people to tell their stories.
Say it again, Matt. Say it again.
Can I say it again? You guys did
it. I was waiting for that special one.
It's not just quantitative. It's qualitative data. It's those stories. Because we could do all the research we want and come up with numbers, but it's the stories to really dive deeper into what is going on.
Right. You can't reduce people to a composite. You know, big data is a problem and we're hurtling faster toward it every second. And even people trying to advance equity somehow think there's an algorithm to do it. And so we can't get away from the stories. But I think you guys have done an amazing, amazing job. All four of you have been incredible. You know, not everybody can handle a crazy Jackie plan. Like, hey, I want you to go do this. What do you mean this? I don't know. Aren't those two sentences enough? Read my mind. Go do this and make it perfect. So I really applaud the fact that you guys were willing to do this. And I love it.
Honestly, I really enjoy this. In a way, it was therapeutic, but it was also like, we're doing something. Like, I feel like this is purposeful. Like this, I can see and envision it having an impact on first-gen students. So this is nice.
Definitely different than sending emails all day. Mm-hmm. But Jackie, just one more question before you go. As a parent of a high school senior and someone that's in this field of work, what's one thing that you wish you would hear more of? Similar to maybe podcasts or anything that you might listen to, what's a topic that you wish you would hear more about?
Oh, I think that I wish I heard more from students themselves. I'd like to hear from students who are not on a college going path. And I'd like to hear it not be an exercise in coaching them to get on the college path. I'd like to hear what they're thinking about, what they're dealing with, why they think this is not for them. I don't think that college has to be the only path for everyone. I always say, I don't want everybody to go to college. I don't want someone to decide who should and shouldn't go to college. I'd like to make sure that we help eliminate information asymmetry. I would like every student and every family to have all of the information that they need to make the best decision for them. I don't think that happens now. I think we have people making whatever decision they can make in the moment. But I would love to hear more from high school students about what they're going through. I think we can all think back. One of the things that we do as professionals is separate people into us and them and disconnect ourselves from our own lived experience and our own emotional journey. And being a teenager sucks. I mean, having teenagers is not a picnic either. I did not plan this right. Three teenagers at once while I'm 50 was not my smartest decision. But students are going through things that are very important to them. And we knew how we felt when we were that age. And everything was emotional and everything was important. And we discount that, or we, you know, spend a minute listening to them before we go with our talking points about why they need to study for the ACT or whatever it is. I think we just need to hear from students more. We cannot design a system that serves and centers students if we don't have students involved, and it can't just be the valedictorian. In fact, valedictorians are already on the path. The world has heard enough from them. I love them. I wasn't one. But I think we just need to talk to students about what they're feeling and what they want, what they would like from the system.
I do want to mention, because I feel like the topics are ever evolving, I think it would be great to hear from our listeners on what topics, what challenges, what are they struggling with, especially our current high school seniors, juniors, you know, high school students, freshmen going into college. Yeah, all y'all students, please let us know what you're struggling with.
You can hit us up on the social medias at ISACFinAid, Twitter and Instagram, Illinois Student Assistance Commission on Facebook.
Well, we would like to thank Jackie for joining us. Matt, we also like to thank you for jumping in this episode. You as well, Joey and Jasmine as well. You all will hear from us soon in season two of First Up. So just be aware that that is coming soon. So yeah, thank you all for listening to our podcast. Bye, y'all.
Thank you.
See you next season.
Thank you for listening to our first season of First Up. We would like to give a special thanks to Jackie Moreno for joining us today and all of our guests from this season. Thank you to ISAC, the First Generation Scholars Network, and our producers, Matthew Montes and Joey Lieberman.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not directly reflect the opinions of ISAC. We hope you enjoyed the episode and have a good day, everyone.